We can scarcely call this learning. No, for it was only half true, an adornment merely to the mind, though calculated to discipline it for the reception of austere and sacred truths. Thus Joseph learned of Eliezer about the universe, the heavenly one, ideally composed of the upper heaven, the heavenly earth of the zodiac, and the southern ocean of the heavens, and about the earthly universe as well, which precisely corresponded, being likewise in three parts, the skyey heaven, the kingdom of the earth, and the earthly ocean. This last, so he learned, ran round the earth's disk in a band, but was also beneath it, and at the time of the great flood might break through all the cracks and mingle its waters with those of the down-rushing heavenly sea. But the earthly kingdom was just like the firm-trodden earth to look at, and the heavenly earth up above was like a mountainous country with two peaks, the sun and the moon, Horeb and Sinai. Sun and moon, together with five other moving stars, made up the seven, which is the number of the planets and bearers of the command, which went round the dam of the zodiac in seven circles of differing circumference, so that this was like the seven-tiered tower whose rings of terraces led up to the highest heaven of the north and the Almighty's seat. Yes, there sat God, and his holy mount glittered as with fiery precious stones, just as Mount Hermon in the north glittered in his snows above the land. As he talked, Eliezer pointed to the gleaming white height in the distance, visible from everywhere, and so also from the Tree of Enlightenment. And Joseph distinguished not between earthly and heavenly. He learned the wonder and the mystery of numbers. 60, 12, 7, 4, and 3. The divineness residing in measure, and how everything agreed and corresponded, so that one could only wonder at and adore the greatness of the harmony. 12 were the stations of the zodiac. They formed the stations of the great circle, and were the 12 months of 30 days each. But the small circuit corresponded to the great, for it too was divided into 12 sections. Thus there was a space of time 60 times as great as the course of the sun, and that was the double hour. It was the month of the day, and proved just as significantly divisible. For the diameter of the sun's course was contained in the course of the sun as visible at the equinox, precisely as many times as the year had days, namely 360 times. And on just these days, the rising of the sun from the moment when its upper rim appeared over the horizon to that when it stood full and clear lasted the 60th part of a double hour. That, then, was the double minute. And as the great circle was formed out of summer and winter, out of day and night the small one, so from the 12 double hours came 12 single ones, for the day and for the night, and 60 single minutes for each hour of the day and night. What order, harmony, and satisfaction in all that! But mark once more, Dumuzi, son of the true wife, make thy senses clear, calm, and alert. 7 was the number of the moving stars and bearers of the command, and to each belonged a day. But 7 was also and especially the moon's number, which marks a path for its brothers the gods there in the sky. For the number of its quarters are 7 days each. Sun and moon were 2, like everything else in the world, and like yes and no. Thus one might group the planets as 2 and 5. And how rightly, too, considering the 5, for that number had a wonderful relation with 12, seeing that 5 times 12 make the 60 already shown to be sacred. But even more wonderful with 7, for 5 and 7 made 12. And that was not all, for by such division and grouping one got a 5-day planetary week, of which 72 came in the year. But 5 was the number by which one must multiply the 2 and 70 to arrive at the glorious 360, and this was at once the sum of the days in the year, and the result of that division of the sun's course by the longest line which could be drawn upon the disk. How wonderful that was! On the other hand, one might group the planets into 3 and 4, upon the highest authority from both sides. For 3 was the number of the rulers of the zodiac, sun, moon, and Ishtar. Moreover, it was the world number. It determined, both above and below, the constitution of the universe. Again, 4 was the number of the quarters of the earth, to which corresponded the times of day. Likewise, it was the number of the parts into which the sun's course fell, each presided over by a planet. Also the number of the moon and Ishtar, each of which displayed 4 phases. But if you multiplied 4 by 3, what did you get? You got 12. Joseph laughed, but Eliezer lifted up his hands and spoke, Adonai. And how did it come that if you divided the days of the moon by the days of its quarters, namely 4, you got again the 7-day week? That was the work of his finger. With all this, young Joseph, under his elder's watchful eye, played as with a game, amusing and profitable at once. He perceived that God had given man understanding in order that he might deal with these sacred matters and make them more consistent. Man, then, had had to make the 365 days match up with the solar year by intercalating 5 days at the end. They were hard and evil days, days of dragons and cursings and wintry nights. Only when they were over did spring appear and the blessing once more prevail. Here the number 5 appeared an intolerable aspect. But 13 was also bad. And why? Because the 12 moon months had only 354 days, and from time to time extra days had to be shoved in, which corresponded to the 13th sign of the zodiac, the raven. Its remainder character stamped the 13 as an unlucky number, just as the raven was a bird of ill omen. Therefore it was that Benoni Benjamin had well nigh died when he went through the gates of birth as through the narrow pass between the peaks of the high mountains of the world, and was almost overcome in the struggle against the powers of the underworld, all because he was Jacob's 13th child. But Dinah had been accepted as a sacrifice in his stead, and Dinah perished. It was well to see into the absolute and penetrate into the nature of the mind of God, for his wonder-working with numbers was not quite without flaws, and man had to have wits enough to adjust it. But the adjustment was attended with misfortune and cursings, and even the number 12, otherwise such a fine number, became ominous, for it had to be added to the 354 days of the moon year to bring them up to the 366 days of the lunar solar year. But if one took 365 days as the right number, then there was always lacking, according to Joseph's reckoning, a quarter of a day, and this amounted in the course of time to 1,460 quarters, or an entire year. That was the period of the dog star, and Joseph's conception of time and space now became superhuman. It passed on from the little circles to more and more mammoth ones which circled far round them, to closed years of awe-inspiring extent. The day itself was a little year with its times and seasons, its summer daylight and winter night, and the days were closed into a great circle. But it was great only relatively speaking, and 1,460 of them closed to comprise the year of the dog star. The world, however, consisted of the overpowering course and cycle of the greatest, or even then, perhaps not quite finally the greatest, years of all, of which each had its own summer and winter. Winter came when all the constellations were in the sign of Aquarius or Pisces. Summer, when they were in the sign of the lion or the crab. Every winter began with a flood, every summer with a fire, so that all the great circles and world revolutions had their definite beginning and end within which they were comprised. Each of them contained 432,000 years, and each precisely repeated all those before it, since the constellations return to the same position and must reproduce the same effects in great and in small. Hence it was that the world revolutions were called renewals of life, also, of course, repetitions of the past, and everlasting recurrence. Likewise, their name was Olam, the Aeon. But God was the Lord of the ages, El Olam. He living throughout the ages, Hai Olam, and he it was who had given to man Olam in his heart, that is to say, the capacity of thinking in aeons, and thus, in some sense, the mastery of them. This was knowledge of the most majestic. Joseph received it in the grand style. But how much else did Eliezer not know? Mysteries which made of knowledge a pleasure at once great and flattering, precisely because it was mysterious, the property on earth of only a small number of highly discreet and exceeding clever folk in temple and lodge, and not shared by the masses of mankind. For instance, Eliezer knew and taught to Joseph that the Babylonian double L was the length of the pendulum which made 60 double oscillations in a double minute. Joseph, prattler that he was, repeated this to no one, for it displayed once more the sacredness of the number 60, which, multiplied by the excellent number 6, produced the most sacred of all, 360. He learned the measures of length and distance, deducing them both from his own pace and from the course of the sun. This, Eliezer assured him, was not presumptuous, since man was a little universe, in all things corresponding to the great one, and thus the sacred numbers of the planetary cycle played their role in the whole structure of measure and in time, which became space. It became volume, and thereby it became weight. Joseph learned the weights and money values of gold, silver, and copper according to Babylonian and Phoenician, the royal and the common usage. He practiced himself in business calculations, learned how to exchange copper for silver, and an ox for such measures of oil, wine, and grain as corresponded to its value in metal. In all this, he was so quick-witted that Jacob, as he listened sometimes, made a clucking sound with his tongue and exclaimed, "Like an angel art thou, like a very angel of Araboth." Again, Joseph learned the most important of the human ailments and their treatment. He learned about the human body, which likewise conformed to the cosmic trinity and was comprised of solids, liquids, and gases. He learned to associate the parts of the body with the signs of the zodiac and the planets, to understand how it was that kidney fat was more precious than all others, in that the organ which it surrounded was connected with the organ of procreation and was the seat of the vital energies, to recognize in the liver the seat of the emotions, and to get by heart a system of instruction written out in sections on a clay model from which it appeared that the entrails were a mirror of the future and a source of dependable omens. Next, he learned about the peoples of the earth. There were 70 of these, or more probably 72, since that was the number of the 5-day planetary weeks. Some of them had quite extraordinary customs and religious practices. This was true in particular of the barbarians of the furthest north, who dwelt in the land of Magog, far beyond the heights of Mount Hermon, and also beyond the country of Hanigalbat, north of Taurus. But the extreme west, called Tarshish, was frightful too. Thither men who knew not fear had come from Sidon, having sailed the length of the great green for uncounted days. And people of Sidon and Gebel had penetrated as far as Kittim, that is to say, Sicily, bent on trade and distance, and had there founded settlements. They had indeed done much to make known the ends of the earth. Not for Eliezer's use and behoof, that he might have wherewith to teach, but because they felt the urge to visit distant parts, and cry up their purple stuffs and skilled embroideries to the inhabitants thereof. There were winds that bore one effortlessly to Cyprus or Alatia, and Dodonim, or Rhodes. And thence, without too grave perils of the deep, they would be borne on to Musri land, or Egypt, whence a trade wind would take their ship back home. But the people of Egypt themselves had subdued Cush, and opened up to knowledge the lands of the Negroes further south up the Nile. They had boldly taken ship, and had discovered the incense lands furthest south on the Red Sea. Punt, the kingdom of the Phoenix. In the furthermost south of all lay Ophir, the land of gold, according to all accounts. As for the east, there was a king in Elam, whom no one yet had been able to ask whether he could see further than his own domains in that quarter of the heavens. Probably not. All this is only an extract from the information imparted by Eliezer to Joseph as they sat under the tree of wisdom. The lad wrote it down under the elder's direction, and read it aloud to himself, with his head on one side, until he knew it by heart. The reading and writing were, of course, the basis and the accompaniment to all else. Otherwise it would have been naught but a whispering and hearsay among men, and then died away. So Joseph had to squat very erect under the tree, his knees apart, holding in his lap the writing-tools, the clay tablet on which he made wedge-shaped signs with a style, the leaves made of reeds pressed together, or the smooth piece of sheep or goat-skin on which he made rows of pot-hooks, with a reed chewed or sharpened to a point and dipped into the red or black part of his paint-saucer. Sometimes he wrote the ordinary writing of the country, in order to practice himself in the language of his time and surroundings, also to learn to write business letters and statements in cleanly fashion, as the Phoenicians did. But at other times he wrote the writing of God, the official and sacred script of Babel, the script of the law, the doctrine, and the sagas. For these he used the style and tablet. Eliezer possessed many beautiful models, writings about the stars, hymns to moon and sun, chronological tables, weather records, even tax lists, as well as fragments of the great versified fables of primitive time. None of these were true, yet they were clothed in words so bold and impressive as to make them seem real to the mind of the reader. They were about the creation of the world and man, about Marduk's fight with the dragon, Ishtar's elevation from servitude to royal dominion, and her journey into hell, about the herb of birth and the water of life, the astonishing things that happened to Adapa, Etana, and that Gilgamesh whose body was divine flesh and who yet did not manage to achieve immortality. All this Joseph read with his index finger, writing it down in the prescribed posture, erect, with only his eyelids dropped. He wrote down and read about Etana's friendship with the eagle, who bore him upwards toward Anu's heaven, so high, in fact, that the earth beneath them looked like a cake, and the sea like a bread-basket. But when both had disappeared, fear had seized upon Etana, and he had plunged down into the depths, together with the eagle, a most mortifying issue. Joseph hoped that he would, in like case, have borne himself better than the hero Etana. But better than this story, he liked that of the man of the forest, Engidu, and how the woman of the city of Uruk converted him to civilization. She taught the brute beast to eat and drink in seemly fashion, to anoint himself and wear clothes, in short, to be like a man and a dweller in cities. Joseph found all this fascinating. It was capital how the harlot taught the man, after having made him sensitive to refinement by 7 days and 7 nights of love. He recited the lines, the language of Babel falling in obscure splendor from his lips. Eliezer kissed the hem of his pupil's robe and cried out, "Hail to thee, son of the lovely one! Thy progress is brilliant. Soon thou wilt be the mazkir of a prince and the admonisher of some great king. Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom." And then Joseph would swagger out to his brethren in the field or plain to play at working under them. But they, showing their teeth, would say, "Look, there he cometh, swaggering, the inky-fingered fool, and hath been reading stones of the time before the flood. Perhaps now he will graciously milk the goats, but perhaps he hath come only to spy, and see whether we cut out pieces from a sheep for our cook-pot. Lay it only in our hands, he should not go empty away, but we should beat him." as now we dare not for fear of Jacob.